Good morning. I know what I'm going to be dealing with now is post-Lag BaOmer, but still, excuse me. I find any excuse to deal with the Midrash of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which is one of my favorite. I know you can say to yourself, I mean, like, we all know this Midrash, right? We've studied it in pre-K, and ever since, every year. But still, today I want to focus on the insignificant details, because as I claim, the secret of the revealing of the Midrash is focusing on those insignificant details, which really tell you what the message is. And so to do that, I want to make a brief introduction. We all know of Lag BaOmer, sort of in the middle of the Sfirat HaOmer, a little towards the end. We all know to identify Lag BaOmer with basically two main characters, Rabbi Akiva, of course, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The question that I want to deal with today is, what is actually the connection? Why do we relate this Lag BaOmer, the celebration of Lag BaOmer, to the character of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Well, Aruch HaShulchan, which appears in source number one, provides two suggestions. One of them is very, you know, is very obvious, makes a lot of sense. The last one is less probable. And he says, "Urgilin likroto hilula Rashbi, uve'eretz Yisrael marbin bitfila uve'adlakat nerot al kivro hakadosh, ve'omrim shenistalek biyom ze, ve'gam yatza ma'amara biyom hazeh." Says Aruch HaShulchan, it's very interesting. He says, first of all, it's interesting because this is one of the only sources I found for lighting candles on graves of tzaddikim. Usually, from what I understood, this is, you know, a debate whether you should light candles or not. But whatever. This day is in Hilula. On this day, we remember Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We go to his grave in Meiron. Why? One reason is that this is his Yahrzeit. Some say that according to the tradition, this is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And that makes a lot of sense. We know of a lot of tzaddikim that the day that they had passed away from this world is a day of celebration, a day of Hilula. The other explanation is that this is the day when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai exited the cave. This is the day where he left the cave in Meron. We all know the story. We'll read it in a second. Now, it's very interesting because the Chidah, which appears in source number two, quotes Reb Chaim Vital. And Reb Chaim Vital says as follows, "Sheyesh shorash besimcha zo sheosin, he'erich baze velo ba befiv lomar shu ptirat Rashbi alav ha-shalom." Says the Chidah, quoting Reb Chaim Vital, out of the two reasons, the less probable one is the first. Meaning, according to Reb Chaim Vital, I don't want to get into the reasonings now, this was not his Yahrzeit. This is not the reason why we celebrate Lag BaOmer and you know, in memory of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, but rather this is the day when he exits the cave. And my question to you is, assuming Reb Chaim Vital knows what he's talking about, what is so important about the fact that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son Rabbi Elazar exit the cave? What's the big deal? Well, obviously, it should be a big deal, and we'll try to figure out in a second what that day really symbolizes. In what sense was this day a day of transformation? In what sense this day has a message for us as Klal Yisrael, as Am Yisrael, hundreds of years later when we read this Midrash till today? So I want to read the Midrash. As I say, we all know it, but as you'll see in a second, I want to focus on really the details that seem to not matter at all, the details that none of us even remember. Says the Midrash, which appears in the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, in source number 3. Diyat v'Rabbi Yehuda, v'Rabbi Yose, v'Rabbi Shimon, v'yativ Yehuda ben Gerim Gabayu. Three of our greatest sages, our greatest Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, which is of course Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, which is a very well-known Bar Plugta of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yose and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, three of them sit together, and along with them, this guy named Yehuda ben Gerim sits together as well. Continues on in the Midrash and says, "Patach Rabbi Yehuda v'amar, kama na'im ma'aseim shel umah zo, tiknu shvakim, tiknu gsharim, tiknu mechatzaot." Rabbi Yose shatak. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai starts off by praising the actions of the Romans. Basically, I mean, we all know, we now identify ourselves with, you know, the Western society. The foundation of the Western world is basically the initiative of the Romans. And he praises the Romans for all their actions. Look at that. They build bridges, they build markets, they build baths, all those things that make this world such a better place. It's so much easier, it's so much time consuming to have a bridge instead of having to walk all the way. Now I can cross this, you know, lake or whatever river in an instant, and I have much more time to do the things that really matter in life. This is a life-changing experience, seeing the moment. Rabbi Yosei chooses his right to be silent. We'll see in a second that he pays for that. And as opposed to that, says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai as follows. Na'ana Shimon ben Yochai va'amar, kol ma shetiknu, lo tiknu, ela letzorach atzman. תקנו שווקים, להוציא בהם זונות. מרחצאות, לעדן בהן עצמם. גשרים, ליטול מהם מכס. Says רבי שמעון בר יוחאי, excuse me, רבי יהודה, but I cannot accept your comment whatsoever. They are not trying to heal the world, make it a better place. This is not what the Romans are about. The Romans are only thinking of themselves. Actually, this is what the Western society is about. We're thinking of ourselves. This is a self-centered society. So you build a bridge, but you build it, already then they had pay tolls, right? And maybe they didn't have easy passes, but they did know how to tax people on bridges. You build markets so as to promote prostitution. You build baths only for your own self-centered benefits. They didn't do that because they really wanted to make the world a better place. Now, obviously, they weren't careful enough. Halach Yehuda ben Gerim v'siper divrahem v'nishmau l'malchut. Now Yehuda ben Gerim runs to the Romans and tells them the whole drill. And the Romans say as follows, Amru, Yehuda she'ila yit'ale. Yehuda she'ila, it's by the way they're playing with the Hebrew here, Yehuda she'ila also sounds like Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai. But obviously what they're saying is, Rabbi Yehuda who had praised the Romans, he shall be promoted, he's going to get this great job. Yosei she'shata kiglele tzipori. As opposed to that, Rabbi Yosei, who was silent, will be exiled to Tzipori up in the Galilee, we all know. Shimon Shegina, Yareg. Rabbi Shimon Shegina, as opposed to that, Rabbi Shimon, who went against the Romans, he shall be executed. And you could just imagine, all around the country, wanted signs with huge portraits of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai are posted, and he has to run for his life. Let's stop here. Don't look at your source sheets. Where does he run to? Where does he and his son run to? Where do they run to? Well, no. They don't run to the cave. That's what I said. We want to focus on the insignificant details. As the Louvre, Tashu be Midrasha, Kol Yom Ahava Maiti Lu'udavei Turifta V'chuza Damya V'charchei, says the Midrash, that he and his son, Rabbi Elazar, flee to the Beit Midrash. They run for their lives and they hide in the Beit Midrash. And every day, the wife of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai brings them a mug of water and a loaf of bread, and they eat the bread. They don't eat the water. They eat the bread and they drink the water. Let's stop here. What does that mean? Why is that important for us to know where they were hiding? Why is that important for us to know what they were eating? What do we care? What does that tell us? Let's stop here and try to reveal what this machloket is about. What is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai about? And I'm going to try to do this. I'll do this in two ways. Let's first try to understand the machloket, the true machloket between Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We know, as I said in the beginning, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are well-known bnei machloket. They have a lot of machlokot all throughout the Talmud and the Mishnah. Even we encounter their machlokot, and a big discussion is as to what basically each of them symbolizes. What are they arguing about here? Well, it's very interesting, but if you're looking really deep into it, there is a pattern. There is a pattern, and you can really try to track the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, also halachically, and as well as that, in terms of hashkafa. First, let me give you an example, an halachic example. We know that there's a big discussion. Our sages have a big discussion on melachot, on actions that are forbidden on Shabbos, and with regards to the actions that we do, as it is being referred to in Hebrew, shelo b'mitkaven, without intention. Let's assume I want to drag a bench from one place to another. Will I do that on Shabbos? I might tear out some grass. Now, my intention was not to tear out the grass. Obviously, I just want the bench to move from one side to another. Let's also assume, for the purpose of the discussion, that this is not what we call psik resha, in the sense that it's not 100% sure that I'll tear out some grass, which is forbidden on Shabbos. There's only a probability that this might happen. Had it been 100% sure that my actions would result in a chilul Shabbat, obviously everyone agrees that this is forbidden on Shabbat. But let's say that there is a probability, a 50% chance. Is it forbidden or not? Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, it is forbidden. Why? Because, says Rabbi Yehuda, I care about the outcomes, the result. And since, you know, there is a probability that I'll tear off some grass while I'm dragging the bench, then I will forbid that because I want to avoid such a result, which would be a Chilul Shabbat. As opposed to that, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai focuses on the intention, on the kavana. Says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the person who's dragging the bench, does he really have a kavana here to do a Chilul Shabbat? Does he want to tear off the grass? He doesn't even care about the grass, he wants the bench. And since I'm focusing on the kavana, I shall permit it, it's okay. Because he doesn't have the intention of doing Chilul Shabbat. This is, as he calls it, Shelo B'Mitkaven, and that's why he permits it. Let's give another example so as we can see, follow the pattern. Hilchot Pesach, we tend to, you know, we like to forget how we get rid of Chametz on Pesach because it's really too tiring, but let's remember anyway. How do you get rid of Chametz? How do you do Hashbatat Chametz? According, well, there's a machloket between Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim. The Tosfot say that Chachamim are basically Rabbi Yehuda. Let's assume it's Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what do? You technically get rid of the chametz. As he says, you go, and he says, Zoro l'ruach, you spread it so that it would be gone with the wind. You get rid of the chametz. As opposed to that, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, Mevatlo balev, meaning you should have the intention, this internal intention in your heart. You should say, this is not chametz for me, I want to get rid of it. He focuses on the kavana, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, who focuses on the final outcome. Now, let's bring an hashkafa machloket. There's a well-known pasuk, which appears in source number let's read source number 6. It appears in Parashat Bechukta, which we just read. The Torah tells us, Vishbati chayara amin aretz, meaning, technically it means that there will be no vicious, no evil animals on this earth. Eventually, we're looking forward to that. Now the question is obviously technical, how would that happen? What, there would be no serpents, no bears, no snakes, no lions in this world? What would happen? What does that pasuk mean? Well, the Midrash, which appears in source number 6, says as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda is our Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, Ma'avira min olam. They will not exist in the world anymore. All the lions, all the bad animals will just perish away. They will not be here. But as opposed to that, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says something else. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mashbitan shelo yizoku. Says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we'll still have lions, only that they will not be vicious. Hashem will take out the evil from the animals. Obviously, it's the same pattern. Rabbi Yehuda focuses on the final outcome. Rabbi Shimon focuses on the intention. So if the animal, chas v'chalila, had bad intentions, Hashem will get rid of that. Now let's apply that to our machloket here. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't care about the Romans. I don't even know the Romans. I care about the final outcome. Obviously, the markets, the bridges, all that's here in this world helps me, promotes my life. And in that sense, obviously, I will support that. As opposed to that, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai cannot accept this whatsoever. He says, I want to focus on the kavana. What was the kavana of the Romans when they did all those things that they have done? And obviously, they had vicious intents. And how do we know that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was right when saying so? Well, you can look at the Midrash which appears in the Gemara in Talmud Bavli, Masechet Avodah Zarah, source number 9. Look at how this Midrash is an identical quote of our Midrash. This Midrash is just a partial quote of what's going to happen in the world to come, how Hashem is going to confront all the nations and try to see have they basically played their right role in this world. And now coming to the Romans, look at the discussion, a very interesting discussion. נכנסה לפניו מלכות רומי תחילה. The Romans, the emperor, confronts HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's skip on. I'm skipping basically to the middle. If you can see it, it's 4 rows from the bottom. אמר להם HaKadosh Baruch Hu במה יעסקתם. You see it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks the Romans, okay, so now tell me, what have you done in this world? And the Romans say, אומרים לפניו, ריבונו של עולם, הרבה שווקים תיקנו, הרבה מרחצאות עשינו, הרבה כסף וזהב הרבנו. We've done great wonders in this world. We built bridges, we built markets, we have brought much of wealth and money to this world. וכולם לא עשינו, אלא בשביל ישראל, כדי שיתעסקו בתורה. And we have done all that only for Am Yisrael so they could sit down and study Torah, and for that I would say, yeah, right. אמר להם הקדוש ברוך הוא, שוטים שבעולם, כל מה שעשיתם לצורך עצמכם עשיתם, you fools, says הקדוש ברוך הוא to them. And now look, this is a direct quote of what Rabbi Shimon has been talking about. All that you have done only for yourself. תיקנתם שווקים להושיבם זנות. You build markets so that as to promote prostitution. מחצאות לעדן בהם עצמכם. Baths only for your benefit. כסף וזהב שלי הוא, and money? Money is mine, says הקדוש ברוך הוא to the Romans. Don't deal with money. Same thing. We see Rabbi Shimon knew what he was talking about when opposing the Romans. He opposes the Romans because he knows what their intentions are. And he cannot accept the actions of such a nation that does the things, that does all these actions in this world, not for the right purposes, but rather for, again, self-fulfillment goals and some negative goals that he cannot tolerate. But it's more than that. It's more than that. Rabbi Shimon doesn't just oppose the Romans because of their wrong intentions. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai opposes, as we'll see in a second, modern technology whatsoever. And why is that? Because as we all know, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and the way Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai views this world is that in a sense, the role of a person is not to deal with any technology, not to deal with anything modern whatsoever, but rather focus on the important things in life, which is sit down and study Torah. How do I know that? The Gemara in Masechet Brachot, which appears in source number 8, describes a very well-known machloket between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Ishmael. I won't read it, I'll just say it briefly. The machloket deals with how we can try to compromise two apparently contradicting verses. One which appears in the Torah tells us, we all know, Vasafta degancha vetiroshcha vitzarecha, we read it every day in Kriyat Shema. It seems as if the Torah is supportive of us going to work, of us harvesting, plowing, doing all those earthly actions so as to make a living. As opposed to that, there's a pasuk in Sefer Yehoshua which says, Lo'olam lo yamus sefer ha-Torah hazeh mipicha. The pasuk says that every day a person should just constantly focus on studying Torah. So the two verses contradict. What should we do? Should we sit down and study Torah? And obviously, if you only sit down and study Torah, you have no ability to go to work and do other things. And as opposed to that, if we follow the commandments of the Torah, it seems apparently that we should go and, you know, deal with the land and do those things that might prevent us or take some of our time, and then we will not be able to devote all our time to sitting down and study Torah. That is the machloket. How do you try to deal with the two apparently contradicting verses? Well, the opinion of Rabbi Ishmael is what we call Torah va'avodah, says Rabbi Ishmael, anheg b'hem inyag derech eretz, meaning, obviously a person should deal with also the earthly world, earthly matters of mundane, as well as with studying Torah. A person should make a composition of the two, and that is the ideal, according to Rabbi Ishmael. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai strictly opposes that. Says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, no, the ideal Jew is the Jew who sits down and studies Torah. And then the Torah is talking about Vasafta degancha vetiroshcha vitzarecha. The Torah is talking about a situation which is not ideal. It's only bediavad. If there is no choice, if no one else could do the job for me, I will do the job. But the ideal person is a person who sits down and studies Torah, and other people do the job for him. He implies Gentiles, people who are not Jewish, because the Jewish nation should just focus on spirituality. This is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So if in the beginning we said that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai opposes the Romans because of their bad intentions, we see that there's also a second reason, even a deeper reason. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai opposes the Romans or opposes modern technology in general, or opposes, maybe we'll see in a second, opposes Am Yisrael dealing with modern technology in general, we'll see it in a second, because he thinks that the role in life is basically to sit down and study Torah and not deal with this earthly world at all. Yet, even Rabbi Shimon, with his strict approach, still uses technology. Where does he run away to? What were we talking about? He runs to the Beit Midrash. Who built the Beit Midrash? Men did. What does he drink? He drinks water, but the water doesn't come out of nowhere. It's in a mug. Who built the mug? Who created the mug? Men did. What does he eat? He eats a loaf of bread. Now we know that according to Midrashim, once upon a time, bread used to grow on trees, but nowadays it doesn't. Who makes the bread? Who breaks it? Man does. And in that sense, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is still, even him, in his extreme approach, is willing, or basically has no choice, but to use some of the utilities, some of the things in the world that are a product of, you know, technological developments. But now, as we'll see in a second, his opinion becomes even more extreme. Why? Let's continue. Let's go back to the Midrash. Long Midrash, I'm sorry. I didn't write it, so. Okay. כי תקיף גזרת, אמר ללברי, נשים דעתן קלה עליהם, דילמה מצר אלינו מגללן, אז אלו תשובים הרת. Please, please, let's not get into the discussion of נשים דעתן קלה עליהם. Let's go on. רבי שמעון and his son are very concerned. They're concerned that the Romans are going to find his wife, are going to torture her and make her reveal their hiding place. So they decide to run away, even from the wife. They don't tell her where they're running to. And now, where do they run to? Now comes the cave. They run to the cave. And the Midrash tells us, Itrach ha-shnisa, Ivri la-ucharuva ve'edna demaya, ve'havu mishalchiminau, ve'havu yatvi ha-tzavarau b'chala, kula yom agarsi, bidan tzalayu lavshu, tzaluya, I'm sorry, lavshu miksu metzalu, ve'hadar mishalchiminau, hiyach idala livlu. Says the Midrash, a miracle happens, and a carob tree grows out of nowhere, and they sit down and eat from the fruits of the carob tree, and a fountain of water emerges out of nowhere, and they drink of the water of the fountain, they shed off their clothes, they cover themselves with sand, all day long they sit down and study Torah, the only exception is when they have to daven, then they stop, they dress up for davening, and then they take off their clothes again and cover themselves with sand, so as that the clothing will not wear off. And that's the way they do it for 12 years, for 12 holy years, the two holy men sit down and study Torah all day long. Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai becomes even more extreme. Up to now, he was willing to use modern technology. Now he doesn't want any part of that. He runs to the cave. Who built the cave? No one. Hashem. No one. Hashem. He eats from the carob tree, but look at how it is important for the Midrash to say that the carob tree was not even planted by man, but rather it's a miracle that happened, and that's why there is a tree there. He doesn't want anything to do with the products of mankind. He drinks water, but as opposed to the water that he drank before that came in the form of a mug, you know, filled with water, now he drinks this directly from this miraculous fountain that emerged out of nowhere. This is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. No, this is like the top of the top. This is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who basically detached himself from this world, doesn't want anything to do with this earthly world, doesn't want anything to do with the product of mankind, only focuses on sitting down and studying Torah and davening for 12 amazing years. Yeah. Excuse me? What? What farm did he bring with him to the cave? That's a nice question. You know what? When I was reading this, sometimes when I read this Midrash, I think of Rav Teichtal, Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, who wrote the book Em Abanim Smecha at the time of the Holocaust. He was a great Talmid Chacham in Budapest. He was one of the, the main leading Orthodox rabbis in Budapest at that time, and he opposes Zionist ideas in the beginning prior to the war, but during the Holocaust, he really transforms and he writes this amazing document, Em Abanim Smecha, and it's basically the most Zionistic book that I ever read. Why am I saying this? First of all, Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal is, to my family, it's very close. He used to be a close friend of my grandfather. But other than that, it's amazing because he writes several times in his book that he's so sorry that he doesn't have any of his books with him when he's writing this document. And he writes this out of memory and he provides exact quotes of, I think there are more than 10,000 quotes in his book. It's an amazing, amazing document. So in that sense, when asking what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai studied in the cave, you know, there are those people, I'm sure that he felt miserable for not, maybe he did bring a book of Torah with him, I don't know. But as they say, I mean, according to the Masoret, they say that the Zohar was written inside that cave, or developed in that cave, but whatever, I don't know, I can't answer that. But it's a good question. Okay, so they're in this cave, completely detached from the world, and now what happens? Says the Midrash. It was 10 shanim b'mirata, they sit in the cave for 12 years. Ata Eliyahu v'kama pitcha d'imarata. Amar man lo day le bar yochai, demet keisar uvetil gzarte. Nafku. says the Midrash that Rabbi Shimon and his son are situated in the cave, and Eliyahu Navi, who, as we know, it's very common to see this motif, Eliyahu Navi likes to wander in the entrances of caves. He walks next to the cave, and he says, who will tell Rabbi Shimon that the emperor had died, that the Caesar had died, and that the decree is no longer valid, and that basically he and his son are freemen? And as they hear that, they go out of the cave, and now what happens? We all know. חזו אינשי דקק ארבי וזרי. אמר, מניחים חיי עולם ועוסקים בחיי שעה? כל מקום שנותנים עיניהם מיד נשרף. Now just think of that. For 12 years they detached themselves from the world completely. And now they go out and what do they see? People wake up in the morning, get into their cars, go to work. Well, maybe they don't get into their cars, but the rest is true. They go to work. They work, they harvest, they plow, they do all those earthly things. And Rabbi Shimon and his son cannot tolerate that. Because for them, this is so insignificant. People are wasting all their time on insignificant things instead of focusing on what really matters. And just like in Star Trek, you know, two laser beams come out of their eyes, and wherever they look, they just destroy. They burn anything they see with their eyesight. They cannot accept that. And a heavenly voice, יצא בת קול ואמרה, להחריב עולמי יצאתם? חזרו למרתכם, הדור הזול. כל יקדח, דהב המחי רבי אלעזר, הדור הזול, איתה ותרי שריה חישתה. אמרי, משפט רשעים בגנום 12 חודש. Now it's very interesting. A heavenly voice come out of the sky and says to them, what, you came out of this cave to destroy my world? Go back to the cave. And it's very interesting. They go back to the cave for 12 months, and the Midrash compares them. It's very interesting. The Midrash says, you're going to sit in the cave for 12 months. I'm punishing you for destroying my world, just like I'm going to punish the wicked in hell, the wicked in the Gehenna, because we know that the punishment of the wicked, of the evil, of the corrupt in the Gehenna is a 12-month time period punishment. It's very hard to accept that, comparing Rabbi Shimon to the wicked in the Gehenna. It's very hard to accept that what the Midrash says. Well, anyways, they go back to the cave, and now they go out. And now the Midrash says, Rabbi Elazar still cannot accept the world, still cannot tolerate the fact that people don't focus on what really matters, so he continues on burning whatever he sees. But now the Midrash says, Rabbi Shimon transforms. Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai goes to the switch, and he says to his son, whatever his son destroys with his eyesight, Rabbi Shimon amends, he corrects, he fixes whatever his son destroys, and he says to his son, בני, די לו לעולם ביובך. Not everyone's perfect. Not everyone can sit down and study Torah. We can, but not everyone. And we have to accept the world the way it is. People have to make a living. People have to go to work. People have to deal with things that are not just holy, not just spiritual. Let's accept that. That's what happens to Rabbi Shimon. He transforms on that day when he goes out of the cave. He's willing to accept the world. Again, he doesn't see this world as an ideal world. He doesn't accept the fact that when people go to work, this is really a great way of living. He just says, okay, this is a means of compromise. They're not capable of what I am capable. I will study Torah for them. This is one transformation, but I claim that the Midrash doesn't end here. I claim that Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai transformed even in a deeper manner. And again, this is not my claim. We'll see again in a second that this is the claim of Rav Kook in his interpretation of this amazing Midrash. Let's see what happens to Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai right on that instant. What happens? Says the Midrash, it's very interesting. Behadei Panya de Male Shabta. Do you see it? They go to this place called Mali Shabta. Chazu ahu sava, dehavana kitrei medanei asa, verahit ben ashmashot. They go to this place, and it's very interesting to look at the setting. It's right before Shabbos. It's a second before Shabbos. It's ben ashmashot. And they see this elderly person running, you know, to make it on time for Shabbos. And he's holding two branches of myrtle, of hadasim, in his hands. And they catch that person in his running, and they say to him, hold it, stop, we have a question for you. And they say to him, Amule, Hanela Malach, Amale, Hu, Lichvot Shabbat. So they ask this old person, why are you holding those branches of myrtles? And he says to them, this is for Kavod Shabbat, this is my way of celebrating the Shabbos, which is kind of peculiar, let's admit. Let's assume he would be walking with a pair of chalot, you know, fresh, you know, smelly chalot. Let's assume that he would be walking with, you know, two candlesticks. But myrtles, where do we see myrtles on Shabbos? We see it usually on Motzei Shabbos, right? The Besamim. What do we need myrtles for Shabbat? So when I said this once, I said it to a group of teenagers. So one of them said he was bringing flowers for his wife, but they had no flowers then, so he brought the myrtles. That is an explanation, but still, something here doesn't make sense. Says Rabbi Shimon to the elderly person, "V'tiski lach b'chad." Okay, so let's assume this is Kavod Shabbat, says Rabbi Shimon. But why do you need two? One's enough. Says the old person, "Chad keneged zachor, v'chad keneged shamal." Obviously, I need two, says the old person, because one of the branches is for zachor, and one of the branches is for shamal. We know that the Ten Commandments, as we all know, appear twice in the Torah, once in Parashat Yitro, once in Parashat Vayetchanan. In Parashat Yitro, we have the Zachor version in the Ten Commandments of the Shabbos, and in Vayetchanan, we have Shemal, so one is opposed to that, and one is opposed to the other. Amar le'livrei, and now Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai transforms again. But this time, it's a drastic transformation, we'll see in a second. He says to his son, חזי כמה חביבים מצוות על ישראל. יתיב דעתהו. Says Rabbi Shimon to his son, look at Am Israel. Look at how perfect they are. Look at how they observe the mitzvot. Look at how the mitzvot are important for them. We should study from them. And the Midrash ends by saying, Yatev Da'ateu, meaning, Hityashva Da'ateu, meaning, he has peace of mind. For the first time in his life, he's not just willing to accept the world by means of compromise. He sees this world as a world of ideal. He sees those people who are going to work as people that you know, do this, L'chatchila. This is a true, basic method of living a Jewish life. The Midrash doesn't end here. I'll just say briefly for all of you, but you can read it on. The Midrash says that right after this incident, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai goes where? Where does he go to? He goes to a bath. The same bath that he objected to in the beginning, now he goes and he immerses himself in a bath. And later on, the Midrash also brings this machloket of what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai does after that. According to one opinion, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai builds a market. According to another opinion, Rabbi Shimon builds a bridge. According to a third opinion, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai constitutes a coin. He does all those things that he so strictly objected to in the beginning. So obviously there's a transformation here, because this is obviously not just about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai willing to accept the world the way it is, in the sense of a compromise, but rather Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai seeing our world as a world of composition, of secularity and holiness, as this ideal world that he should, you know, to partake in. He himself deals with all those earthly things that he objected to. So what happened? What is this encountering of this elderly person? What does that symbolize? What happened over here? Well, so as to explain that, I want to focus on an amazing interpretation provided by Rav Kook to this Midrash. This amazing interpretation appears in a very interesting book. Not too many know of it. The book is called Ein Ayah. The book was written by Rav Kook. It's actually a collection of interpretation of Midrashim that Rav Kook provides for Midrashim that appear in the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat and in the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. Unfortunately, we don't have interpretations of other Midrashim which appear elsewhere in the Talmud. But here, Rav Kook provides this very interesting interpretation. It appears in... No, it's not marked, but at the end, right beneath source number 10, to your left. Now, Rav Kook claims that the key for the understanding of this transformation is the two concepts, one of Shamal and one of Zachor. We know, right? The old person was telling Rabbi Shimon, Echad keneged Shamal, Echad keneged Zachor. That's the key. This is the understanding. Before reading Rav Kook's explanation, let's ask ourselves, what's the difference between Shamor and Zachor? Well, it appears, it's source number 5. This is a quote of Parashat Vayetchanan in Sefer Dvarim. Over here we see the Shamor version. What is the Shamor version about? Shamor et yom ha-shabbat le-kodsho, says the Torah, ka'asher tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. We should observe the Shabbat. We should protect even the Shabbat. Shamor is in the sense of guarding, of protecting the Shabbat, because Hashem commanded us to do so. Sheshet yamim ta'avod v'asita kol melachtecha, ויום השביעי שבת להשם אלוקיך, לא תעשה כל מלאכה, אתה ובנך ועבדך ועמתך ושורך וחמורך, all the less, וכל בהמתך וגרך אשר בשעריך, למען ינוח עבדך ועמתך כמוך. And now we're getting to the punchline. Why? Why should we observe the Shabbat? Why should we fulfill this mitzvah of zachor, of shamor, I'm sorry? וזכרת, says the Torah, you have to remember. כי עבד היית בארץ מצרים, ויוציאך השם אלוקיך משם ביד חזקה ובזרוע נטויה. על כן ציווך השם אלוקיך לעשות את יום השבת. What's the reason? We were enslaved right in Egypt, and Hashem miraculously, with all his chesed, takes us out of there, not because of our virtues, not because we were worthy of it, not because we had the strength to, you know, to redeem ourselves, but rather Hashem fully does the job for us. We're completely passive, and Hashem grants us with all this kedusha, all this chesed, while, you know, taking us out of Egypt. This is one form of celebrating Shabbat. Where does the kedusha of Shabbat come from? Well, obviously, according to this pasuk, the kedusha of Shabbat comes from Hashem. A second ago, it was just Friday. And now, it's Shabbat. And Hashem, with his chesed, just like he did when he exited us out of Egypt, Hashem grants us with all that chesed, all that kedusha, and all of a sudden, you walk to shul, and you feel the kedusha in the air. This is what our neshama yetera is about, right? We have an extra spare, you know, 2-for-1 on Shabbos. An extra neshama, a lot of potential, a lot of kedusha, a lot of holiness, a lot of spirituality granted us from above. This is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This is what he holds Shabbat is about. You know what, as we'll see in a second, as Rav Kook explains, this is how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai views this world, not just Shabbat. Where does this our kedusha come from? It comes from Hashem. Why are we holy? Because we deal with the Torah that was granted to us from above. This is what the kedusha is about on Shabbos and even on every day. Our kedusha is derived from Hashem. That's why Rabbi Shimon, when he encounters the old person, asks him, why do you need two branches? I know of one. One is enough. I know Shamor. But the old person reminds Rabbi Shimon that there is another commandment. There's another version of that same commandment. And a different word appears there. This one is Zachor. And it's another form of celebration of Shabbat. It's another form of Kedusha of Shabbat. What is Zachor about? Let's read it. It appears in source number 4. The Torah in Parashat Yitro, the Ten Commandments, explain to us what the Kedusha of Shabbat is about. And see, it's a completely different explanation. Not at all like the one we saw in Parashat Vayetchanan a second ago. Zachor et yom ha-Shabbat lekodesho, says the Torah. Sheshet yamin ta'avod ve'asit kol melachtecha ve'yom ha-shvi'i Shabbat la'Hashem elokecha lo ta'aseh kol melacha. Again, the same list. Ata uvincha, 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 asher bisharecha. Why? Why? Why should we remember the Shabbat? Says the Torah, כי ששת ימים עשה השם את השמיים ואת הארץ, את הים ואת כל אשר בם, וינח ביום השביעי, על כן ברך השם את יום השבת ויקדשהו. What is the reason? It's completely a different reason. You know, we sometimes read through it and we don't realize. The reason is different. Where does the kedusha of Shabbos come from, according to this version? Right. Sheshet Yemei Ma'aseh, the 6 secular days that are prior to Shabbat. And it's obvious. The interpretation is obvious. Obviously, Hashem grants us with a lot of chesed on Shabbat. There's a lot of kedusha in the air. The atmosphere is holy. But the kedusha of Shabbat is not just derived from above. It's not just what we call itaruta de le'ela, meaning the skies offering us, you know, granting us with kedusha. It's also about us figuring out how we can bring kedusha into this holy day where we take all that's earthly and elevate that and uplift it. We take the 6 days where we go to work and we find the energy derived from those 6 days to bring meaning to Shabbat. Obviously, this is very clear. What do we eat on Shabbos? We eat food that we worked very hard for. But that earthly war food that we bought with our earthly money after we went to our earthly works, this earthly action constitutes a spiritual experience. This is also what the Shabbos is about. It's about the food. It's about the books that we read. It's about, you know, how we bring simcha into the Shabbat. We take our earthly world and we elevate it. We uplift it. And that brings kedusha to Shabbat. the 6 days, the 6 secular days are not just empowered by Shabbat. It's not just about Shabbos bringing meaning to our everydays, to the rest of our week, as the Kuzari explains. It's not just about us fueling on Shabbat, right? Taking all this energy from Shabbat and making it, having the ability to make it through another week of holiness. It's that, of course, but it's also about the 6 days bringing Kedusha, bringing power to Shabbat. And that is a chidush for Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This he wasn't aware of. The fact that our earthly world could bring Kedusha to our, that our earthly matters of mundane could be actually holy, could provide us with holiness. This is a chiddush to him. This is why he's so astounded, so amazed when he encounters the old person. This was just an introduction. Now let's read Rav Kook. I'm sorry. Well, it's not going to be long, I promise you. Let's read Rav Kook. You see under the title, Ein Ayah. Kedushat HaShabbat, says Rav Kook, the holiness of Shabbos. Yishnaim bekocha is derived from two sources, as we said. Ha'echad, ma shei mekadeshet u'ma'ala et Yisrael bekedushata elyona, u'meromemet otam be'etzem kedushat hayom lemala mikol inyanei achol, u'medabaktam bekavod elyon u'kedusha elyona. The first power, the first source, I'm sorry, of the kedusha of Shabbos, is the fact that Shabbat elevates us. It makes, brings meaning to our life. We come to this day, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we feel this huge burst of kedusha, holiness granted to us from above, and that gives us power again to bring meaning, to bring holiness to our everyday life, and that is the power of Shabbat. But that's only one source. Chutz mizeh, the second source of kedusha of Shabbat, hishei memashechet gam ken et koach kol yemei ha'maaseh in kol chilonutam v'shiflutam. Shabbat derives the power out of all the 6 days of maaseh, all those 6 secular days, Sunday through Friday, all the secularity of them, all their deterioration, all of that is being uplifted. Uve'en hakara muchashit hanefesh ha'israelit meromemet atzma afilu bimei achol mipnei zecher shel yom ha'shabbat, says Rav Kook. And I'm not just talking about Shabbos here, says Rav Kook. This midrash is not just talking about Shabbos. Shabbos was used here as a parable for our lives. What are our lives about? Obviously, in order for us to feel Kedusha, it's essential. It's necessary for us to go daven, for go to go to the yeshiva, to the midrasha, to sit down and study Torah, to go to this, you know, to go to a shul, to the atmosphere of Beit Midrash and feel the Kedusha in the air. Obviously, this is an essential part of our Jewish identity. But it's not only about that. It is also essential for us to figure out that even when we deal with our everyday matters of mundane, even then, Kedusha could be derived from there. And you know what? It's a different form of Kedusha. It's Kedusha, just like the Kedusha that you find in the Beit Midrash is something that you cannot find out in the streets. Out there, in the streets, you find Kedusha that you cannot find elsewhere. In that sense, we'll see it in a second, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai realized that he was preventing himself from holy experiences that he cannot experience unless he's involved with this earthly world. We'll see it in a second. Says Rav Kook, Uvezeh, en divrei hachol shfelim kol kach, kmo shehem nirim b'chitzoniyut shelehem. We tend to realize that whatever is secular, you know, is deteriorated. It seems to us as if it's not holy. But when you dig deep inside, you see that even our secularity, even secular things that we do, have the potential of being holy. And they're not as secular, not as earthly as they might seem, you know, first impression. Ki im hem holchim umit'alim b'kedushat ha'Shabbat. Our secular days are not just secular, but rather, we realize that they have a meaning, they have a purpose, they have a goal, and they find that in the holiness of Shabbos, both by us bringing holiness to our everyday lives, but also by us deriving holiness from our everyday lives. The afalpi, sherov hazman, hina masukim ba'avodat achol, mikol makom, kmo chen ha'kedusha akrova yelibam. And now, Rav Kook applies this, you know, theoretical idea on the Midrash. up to now, when Rav Kook was talking about looking about people going to work, harvesting, plowing, doing all those earthly things, he couldn't tolerate that. Because he thought that those people are giving up on spiritual experiences just for the purpose of making money or making a living. But now he realizes that when you dig deep inside, you see that those people are actually, when conducted accordingly, when doing this in the right manner, they actually derive spiritual experiences from their everyday lives. And this is the understanding that Rabbi Shimon ben Bar Yochai realizes on that day when he exits the cave. Al pi ha-mabat hazeh, yesh la-shkif al chayei ha-sha'ah ve'al ha-oskim behem be'ayin shel korat ruach. Up to now, Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai saw all those people as dealing with chayei sha'ah, with things that, you know, come and go, concepts that are not eternal, only, you know, materialistic concepts. But all of a sudden he realizes that what he used to consider as, you know, insignificant is actually something that's worthy of his appreciation. And now, says Rav Kook, and this is the punchline, and it's beautiful. Ben Hashmashot הוא המעבר שבין העבר לעתיד. הוא מקשר את החול אל הקודש, הוא מורה השפעת הקודש על החול על ידי כישורו. Says Rav Kook, when does all of that happen? As we said, we want to focus on the insignificant details today, right? We asked about the Beit Midrash, we asked about what they were eating in the Beit Midrash, we asked about the cave, what they were eating in the cave, all of that. Now let's go to the Ben Hashmashot. Why does the Midrash tell us that Rabbi Shimon encounters the elderly person at the time of Ben Hashmashot? Says Rav Kook, it's amazing. This is the only time, Ben Hashmashot, where secularity kisses, touches, encounters holiness. A second before Shabbos, a second before all the melacha is forbidden, a second before we go to shul, it's not 100% secular and not 100% holy. It's this composition that reflects on the concepts that Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai realizes on that day. We shouldn't detach ourselves from secularity. Our ideal lives are those at the time of Ben Hashmashot, where secularity is composed with holiness, when secularity is elevated by holiness, and when holiness is derived from secularity. This composition, this is the ideal Jew. This is why Adam was created when? Ben Hashmashot, at this time. But it's not just about that. We still didn't explain the myrtles. Why myrtles? Says Rav Kook. Afalpi. שמצד ההרגשה החיצונה נראה שהחול הוא מאוד מגושם ופחות. מכל מקום יש בו כוח פנימי, שרק בסקירה של הרגשה פנימית חדה, הדומה לחוש הריח, שהוא דבר שהנשמה נהנית ממנו ואין הגוף נהנה ממנו, רק אז יוכר קדושתו ועילויו. Says Rav Kook, the myrtles are also a parable. They also express the same idea, just like the timing, just like Ben Hashmashot. It's a very well-known concept, the use of the sense of aroma in Midrashim is often used. And Rav Kook explains, I won't get into it, that of all our senses, this is the only one that was not impaired in the chet, in the sin of Adam and Chava when they ate from the tree of knowledge. This is the only sense that was not impaired. They ate, they looked at the tree, they touched the tree, they listened to the serpent. They used all their senses partaked in that sin other than the sense of smell. There is no talking about the smelling. They did not smell the fruit. Why? Because the sense of smell, as Rav Kook says, is again a symbolism of the composition between holiness and secularity. I mentioned Besamim on Motzei Shabbat. Why do we smell Besamim on Motzei Shabbat? To compensate, to overcome the loss of our neshama yitera, right? So what do? Basically, we take a branch of a tree which is secular, right? We chop it down. We put it in a nice, you know, glass or whatever container, and we smell it. We use our physical body to smell something that's very physical, very earthly, but who benefits from that? Our neshama. This is exactly it. You take something that's completely secular, but what is derived from it is completely holy. And this is what Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai realizes. Look, I could be a great person. I could be a great Talmid Chacham. But if I don't have Besamim on Motzei Shabbos, how will I overcome the loss of the Neshama Yetera? My Torah is, I need something besides my Torah, along with my Torah, I need something secular as those Besamim. Rabbi Shimon realizes that for those 12 years, when he had no vesamim in the cave, and to my best recollection, carobs don't smell that well, when he was in the cave, he missed out on spiritual opportunities, like the opportunity of smelling myrtles. He missed out on spiritual opportunities, and now he has to overcome that. He overcomes that in two ways. We said that he objects to the actions of the Romans in two manners. A, he objects to their intention. B, he objects to the general idea of people dealing with what's earthly instead of what's holy. Well, the second thing we see that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai overcomes in the sense of realizing that it's not just necessarily about dealing with Kedusha in the sense of studying in the yeshiva, but rather that Kedusha could also be found when we go to work. It's how I click on my computer. It's how I talk to my clients. It's how I take my kids to school. All of that should also be a source of Kedusha. This is what our Jewish entity is about. About implementation of the Torah in every aspect of our life. And in that sense, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai realizes that even markets, even bridges, even baths could be of great virtue, could be of a great source for us to derive holiness. But still, there is a problem. The problem is that those who built the bridges and the markets and the baths had the bad intentions. So obviously, what should we do now? Well, me, says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, this great sage, this great Talmud Chacham, am going to go by myself and build with the right intention a bridge, a market, a bath. I am going to do all those things that I have objected to in the beginning. Now I'm going to do them with the right kavana to show that this is also part of my Jewish identity, that I am a complete person when I study Torah and when I'm able to elevate my every matters, my everyday matters of mundane with the Kedusha, with the powers that I have. This is what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is about. So with that, I've ended, but there's still a but. What does that have to do with Lag BaOmer? Well, obviously now we understand that the exiting of the cave was not just about a nice story. This is a symbolism of a transformation of this great Tana, this great Talmid Chacham, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who gives us a great lesson about life. But it doesn't just end there. We know that according to Midrashim, Sfirat HaOmer is considered to be an amazing time period of redemption. These 49 days are days where we prepare ourselves for the receiving of the Torah, but it doesn't end there, according to the Midrash, for the receiving of the Torah and entering, Imirtzeh Hashem, Eretz Yisrael. These are days of preparation for Eretz Yisrael, and this is why the Midrash says that the virtue, that on account of the observance of mitzvah Sfirat HaOmer, we are going to be merited to return to Eretz Yisrael. This is what the Midrash says. And in that sense, explains Rav Kook, all my interpretation of Rav Kook's, all of Rav Kook's interpretation of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai transformation, we have to realize that it is applied in Eretz Yisrael. The understanding of the composition of secular and holy concepts, this is what Eretz Yisrael is about. Look at it. It's just a land. It's just pieces of earth and trees and mountains. It's physical. But it's not physical at all, trust me. I know, you know, we know, it's not physical at all. It's Kedusha. Kedusha, which is inscribed within earth. This is a concept that basically, this is what Eretz Yisrael stands for. And in that sense, the understanding of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, of the necessity, of the importance of composition, of secular and holy ideas, is basically the understanding of the role of Eretz Yisrael in our lives. And in that sense, I want to end by reading two sources. Excuse me, I'll do it very briefly. Source number 10. First, I want to read a quote from Orot of Rav Kook, which appears right beneath the introduction of the Zohar. This is a quote. The original quote is being taken from a book called Orot HaTchiya, where Rav Kook talks about concepts of returning, of redemption, of returning to Eretz Yisrael. And look at how he explains this transformation of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He's not talking about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai here, but he actually is. He's talking about what role Eretz Yisrael plays in our lives in the sense of composition, of secularity and holiness. That's Rav Kook. היהדות של העבר, ממצרים ועד הנה, מלחמה ארוכה היא נגד הטבע בצידו הכאור. Says Rav Kook, and it's interesting that he mentions Mitzrayim. We saw Mitzrayim. We read about Mitzrayim a second ago when we were talking about Shamor, right? We the concepts of Judaism from Egypt and up to today, when we were situated in the diaspora, basically, was that we should detach ourselves from secularity, or what Rav Kook calls as teva, nature. We should not deal with nature, but only with holiness, just like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai did in the cave. לחמנו בטבע כדי לנצחו, כדי לרדותו בתוך ביתו. We opposed nature. We opposed secularity. Look at the shtetls. For hundreds of years, what saved us? What saved our Jewish identity? The fact that we were completely devoted to studying Torah. We didn't deal with the everyday lives. We dealt, you know, just in the sense of making a living. But not that wasn't the ideal Jew. And obviously, it was necessary for us to preserve our Jewish identity. Now, says Rav Kook, something's happening. Ha'olamot, says Rav Kook, holchim umitbasmim. The worlds are transforming and are becoming more fragrant. There's aroma in the air. We've seen the use of aroma in our midrash. In what sense are the worlds becoming more fragrant? Be'etzem omek ha'teva tvi'a gdola mitgaberet likdusha ul'tahara. And all of a sudden we realize that even our involvement with everyday lives, with our nature, there is a kedusha in that nature, in those earthly concepts. Haruach ha-tzair, now he's talking, when he's talking about ruach tzair, he's talking what? He wrote this in the 20s, in the 30s. Well, we're all young, right? The young notion here, what happens? Ha-tovea et arzo, sfato, cheruto, chvodo, sifruto, vekocho, rechusho, rikshotav. All of a sudden, we see young people who say, we want to be Jewish, we want to be frum, but we also want a land. We also want to have a language. We also want to have a national identity. We want to have our own literature. And not just in the sense of holy literature that's located in the library, in the shul. We want a person like Rav Chaim Sabato, who could be the head of Yeshivat Esder in Ma'ale Adumim, and who could write amazing books like Te'um Kavanot, which I assume some of you have seen the movie, and Emet Me'eretz Titzmach. We want literature. We want poetry. We want possessions. We want to deal with things that are earthly, but in a holy manner. And that seems natural, says Rav Kook. This is a normal nation. We are returning to being normal. We are returning to our bodies. We're realizing that us dealing in being involved with secularity in a holy manner, we realize that this is basically a normal way of living. And now, says Rav Kook, נזרמים הם על ידי שטף של טבע שבתוכויותו מלאו אש קודש. We realize that all this nature, this earthly world, is basically composed of holy fire. גדולה תביעתנו הגופנית, and all of a sudden, our bodies have their demand. גוף בריא אנו צריכים, we need healthy bodies. Up to now, it was not even Jewish to talk about sports or doing, you know, being involved with healthy matters. But all of a sudden, we realize that it's an essential part of our Jewish identity. התעסקנו הרבה בנפשיות. We dealt a lot with our neshama. שכחנו את קדושת הגוף. We forgot the holiness of our body. זנחנו את הבריאות והגבורה הגופנית. שכחנו שיש לנו בשר קודש. We forgot our holy flesh. לא פחות ממה שיש לנו רוח קודש. Which is as holy or has the potential of being holy just like our neshama. עזבנו את החיים המסיים. We let go of our natural lives. כל תשובתנו תעלה בידינו. Now, how will we become perfect individuals? What's the ideal Jew, says Rav Kook? The ideal Jew will only get there when he realizes, in kol hod ruchniuta, gam tshuva gashmit yotzeret dam bari, basar bari, gufim chatuvim ve'eitanim, ruach lohet zoreach al gabei shririm chazakim. He's talking about models here. In order for us to realize our spiritual role in life, we have to realize the power of our body. We have to realize that we need, it's essential for our existence. We need a healthy body, a muscular body. We need a healthy method of living. We have to compose our lives. We have to deal with secularity and bring meaning to our secular lives. And that is by itself what a complete Jew, observing Jew is about. Realizing that our Kedusha derived from the Torah should be implemented on an everyday life basis. That's according to the approach of Rav Kook. And now, and by that I wish to end, I want to see how this explanation of Rav Kook is basically appearing in the introduction provided according to the Masoret by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This is what he says in his introduction to the Zohar. What is, how do we promote Geula? How will we be merited to see Mashiach? And by that I wish to end source number 10, says the Zohar. Man minachun, the one of you, dichashucha mehapcha lenehora, utaamin marira lemitka, ad lo yeitunacha. The one of you who realizes that darkness should be transformed into light, and that bitterness should be transformed into sweetness, when you'll realize how to do that, how to transform darkness into light and bitterness into sweetness, that would be an indication that you have the tools to return to Eretz Yisrael. You realize the power of Eretz Yisrael. You realize the power of Mashiach. The power of composing darkness and light, bitterness and sweetness, secularity and holiness, and realizing how even our secular worlds could actually make a difference, could actually be elevated, really have a meaning, and basically could be utilized as an essential tool for us to be better individuals, to make this world a better place, and Yemir Tzah Hashem, to be merited to Geula Shlema B'Mera.